This afternoon, I'm not going to say anything about my way of announcement, except just to say we've got Joel Wolfe, who's a colleague from this university in the School of Physics, and he's interested in cognition and acoustics and other things, and a colleague in the Shul, who presented at the conference, and the title of their lecture this afternoon is Contrasting Perception in Music and Speech. Thank you very much, we'd welcome.
Now, when you publish an abstract like ours, combining the profound and the whimsical, you can expect some distraction. And the principal arguments that we've put up have attracted criticism of two different sorts. On the one hand, there are those people who say that the ideas we've proposed are simplistic, speculative, and just plain wrong. While on the other side, we have the criticism that these ideas are so self-evidently true that they've been known in the profession for many years. So, inspired and encouraged by criticisms of that sort, we've decided to try and present for you today, with illustrative examples, some of the key ideas. Now, discussion of the possible utility of music is inevitably speculative, and so it's of limited scientific value. But it's great fun. And so in that spirit, the participants here have been invited to come along and give their different points of view without the sort of strictures that they would have if they were writing for peer review. So let me introduce them. My colleague Kristen Buchatsky is from the music school, and she organises the performance groups that perform on campus. Stella Sola is a student from the same university and also a very fine cellist, as you'll find out in a moment. Emery Schubert has been studying musical perception and emotional response, but as well as that, he's very well run around Sydney as a fine conductor. Let me start by oversimplifying this argument that I've put up here. Now, in speech, we perceive timbre categorically. That is, we use phonemes, which are timbre elements, different speech sounds. We put them together, we create words, and we generate highly detailed, specific meanings. The text of speech is effectively transmitted digitally via parameters that are associated with timbre, if we were to think about them in music. Now, in music, the things that we digitise, the parameters that we perceive categorically, are the pitch and some elements of the rhythm. So the text of music, the stuff that we write down, is conveyed digitally via pitch and rhythm. Now, music communicates in a rather less detailed and less specific way than does speech. Precisely have we communicated the meaning in the two texts that I had on the overhead? Some would say that this question is missing the point. I mean, music communicates differently and expresses different things. Music doesn't make you know, it makes you feel. Now, Emery has been measuring emotional response to music in, I believe, vectors in a two-dimensional space. Emery, would you like to explain about musical communication?
Well, the system for measuring emotional response that I've used, it reduces emotion, a very simplified model. The two dimensions only, arousal, the activity and the sleepiness of the emotion, and the valence, the happiness or sadness. And this is then measured continuously in time. People can respond with a fair degree of agreement. You can break that emotion space into about a 10 by 10 matrix, and emotional responses seem to occur about every 1 or 2 or maybe 3 seconds after the musical event.
So we've got 10 by 10, 100 elements at about a hertz, which is several bytes per second, which actually corresponds roughly to the information transfer rate in speech, but I don't suppose that's how you use it.
No. I mean, it's not decoding icons. It's really how it occurs over time, how it builds up. And I mean, if I say I told you a sad story, it might not make you cry, but if I said the word sad, it probably wouldn't at all.
Just as if I were to say to the audience the word joke, they're unlikely to laugh.
There are differences, what we used to call rules of harmony. In almost all styles of music, the notes that you can use are limited in some way by the context, even over long time scales. There's nothing analogous to that in speech.
So you mean that the choice of pitch is limited by these formal and aesthetical considerations?
And the possible lengths of the notes are constrained too. In most music, they add up to make whole bars and they work to establish a rhythm. This categorisation of note length that you were talking about can only work if you have set up a rhythm. To know if it's quavers or crotchets, you have to establish a rhythm.
Yeah, but to know the constraints that are part of the communication, that they're also part of the ineffability.
Implying that communication may be ineffable.
Well, we've asked Stella to bring her cello along this afternoon to demonstrate that very ineffability. Yes, we did.
Well, if you didn't agree, what do you think about it? Of course you can communicate, but in a rather different way.
In speech we use phonemes, we categorise the, we pitch, and we use that to modify the timbre and the envelope independently of the pitch. So ba and do have different meanings, even different grammatical functions.
So ba 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 is one timbre, and do 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 is another.
So if instruments wanted to talk to us in our language, they could change the timbre on each note. It sounds like Klangfarben melody.
Perhaps Klangfarben melody does have something to say to us after all.
Especially in tonal music, some notes just don't fit.
You can show it with probe tones.
What are probe tones?
Well, a probe tone is a probe tone, but it is also a methodology for gathering information about music cognition. It involves a priming stimulus followed by the probe tone. Then this probe tone is rated on a scale, maybe a scale of 1 to 10.
Can you demonstrate?
Oh,
flesh to make a tonal song. You can use a scale as a motive, then just add the words, and then we'll welcome it as you can just close your eyes and listen, singing words. Then we'll sing my little
Thank you. And all speed.
Charlie Butt, categorizing the pitch. We can't understand your questions unless you sing it in categorical pitch. Would you like to repeat? That's just the way we always give lectures at the University of New South Wales. Any more questions? Ian? The phenomenon of high redundancy. You just keep beeping the same thing over and over, sample, sample, and over again. K log 1 equals 0.
Perhaps we could invite the group to give us an encore if they'd be willing.
Yep.
I think there was another question.
I didn't see it.
He's had one before. Yeah. Go. We could never do that. You see, we can make our own life. I love those jazz kids, kids. I think she's got it. By George, she's got it.
Yeah.
Now that you've rehearsed, would you like to try the ostinato again?
Thank you.